Yes, hi, hello, and welcome inside a Tuesday edition of the program Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Glad you're with us on the show as you always are. We have a bunch of different topics on the show today. Pacers get a big win last night against the Los Angeles Clippers. I would imagine there's a large part of people out there that didn't stay up for the majority of that contest. But, you know, this has been the story of the Pacers all year long, right? They get these big wins, and then they slip up, and then they get these big wins, and they slip up. It's really hard to figure out who they are, but I'll tell you one thing that is for sure, and there shouldn't be a concern about Tyrese Haliburton because he was great last night. So we'll get to a little bit of that coming up. I also want to touch on the Indianapolis Colts and who they did not get, because L'Jarius Sneed, the former Kansas City Chiefs cornerback, is headed into the division, but not to the Indianapolis Colts, as previously reported. And he is headed to Tennessee. The contract signature is in place. And, you know, I go back to a week ago at this was it a week ago at this time or maybe 2 weeks ago? And I got a little fired up about the Indianapolis Colts and free agency and their aggressiveness, while every other team is trying to improve themselves. From a veteran standpoint, the Indianapolis Colts feel very content to just run it back with their own. And I know I differ from most, and the players that the Indianapolis Colts have brought back are, you know, good, solid players. But it feels like every other team in the NFL is trying to improve themselves from a veteran standpoint. And I get it. I hear, well, you know, you got to understand, they didn't just not bring anybody in. They brought back their own. People are forgetting that point. I guess. But at the same time, this team looks like it's going to be no different, other than the rookies that they bring in the NFL draft in the later part of April. Other than that, you're just going to run it back with the same guys. So you've got the same coaching staff. You have a little bit of difference in your offensive game plan if Anthony Richardson stays healthy, and your defense is going to stay the exact same. Your skill position players are going to stay the exact same, and you're banking on everybody's just going to get a little bit better by continuity. I don't agree with that, but it seems like that's the path the Indianapolis Colts are headed down. So we'll dive into that topic as well. Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News was on the story yesterday of Peyton Sparks heading back to Ball State men's basketball. So we'll get his thoughts on that, as well as some other Ball State sports-related topics coming up at 4:40 on the program today. It feels like The middle of the week, let me take you through the last week, okay? So March Madness is one of those weeks where it kind of stands alone. You know, it really is one of the few weeks out of the sports calendar that March Madness gets a week. We have this long buildup. So Monday, we complain about the bracket and maybe those teams that got snubbed. Tuesday, we continue that topic. Wednesday, we're previewing Thursday, and then Thursday and Friday are self-explanatory and the weekend hits. Then, like we did yesterday, we recap what happened over the weekend. And then as Tuesday hits of the week going into the Sweet 16 and Elite 8, it mirrors a very normal week. We go back to other topics on the program. Like, I don't hear a lot of people breaking down Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games today because we are a ways away from having that happen. So it feels like a regular week. And so the reason I bring that up is this. The topics that are going to be dominant over the next 3-4 months or so, we have the NBA playoffs coming up, and the Pacers seem to be a big factor about that. So our coverage of the Pacers is going to ramp up. Our talk about the Pacers is going to ramp up. The NFL draft is going to hit at the later part of April, and then we'll hit the month of May, where the Indianapolis 500 comes in for the entirety of that month. We'll also have Colts and Pacers-related topics in June. I mean, it's going to hit pretty darn quickly. I do want to mention, next Thursday, we will be on the road for this particular program, and I'm fired up for it because it's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. We have a pretty neat concept that's going to hit coming up next Thursday, so more information on that. And of course, more and more on-the-road shows are going to occur for this particular program, and I'm excited for that to be the case. So we are, that's what happens in spring and summer. We get out and about. We have a little fun that way. Not that we don't have fun in studio, but we get to do those patio shows again, and I'm fired up for it. I really, really am. Very excited to see how all of that plays out this year. So, again, no phone calls today, but we can take your interaction on Twitter, at MarkWMUN on Twitter as well. Okay, I'm going to complain about something real quick, and I guess over the last 3 weeks I've done this in a variety of different topics. It's kind of the mantra in sports now, okay? You can't stay stagnant. You always have to do something new, okay? Every sport has done it, and the NFL continues to tinker with different things that just kind of make me shake my head. It's not necessarily going to sway the popularity of the sport. That's by no means what I'm about to say. But it makes me scratch my head a little bit, not like literally, but figuratively, of kind of the thought process of why you always have to change. So, one of the things that the NFL is now doing is this kickoff rule. Now, I'm going to say this, okay? I don't understand this kickoff rule enough to really have a factor with it. I get it's to lessen collisions, and I get because of what the NFL has done over the last several years, it has basically made the kickoff irrelevant. It's just almost window dressing. You do the kickoff for the show. It goes in the end zone, and 9.5 to 9.7 times out of 10, there will be no return. So you walk the balance of wanting to have that part of the game, but also at the same time, you walk it to where you're watering it down just to do it. You know, I guess the kickoff is going to occur from the same spot. The kickoff members, other than the kicker, are going to be on the opponent's side of the field. It's too much. It's too much. It really is. It comes down to this, in my opinion: have the kickoff or don't. Have the kickoff or don't. If you don't want it to be a part of the game, figure some other way to do it. I guess I don't get the whole thought process. It's just going to be interesting, and it feels like the NFL's trying to save some form of the kickoff or not. And then the hip drop tackle stuff is very interesting. Like, I certainly get it. Like, the league, I would like to believe, is trying desperately to make sure that they protect player safety. And no, I will not go on this show and say it's ridiculous. Why would they ban the tackle? Because if it's in the spirit of player safety, okay, I can get down with that. But when do we come to the point in football where we just say, guys, it's a physical sport? There's going to be times where you bring down a player defensively, and it's going to be awkward. Like, it's happening in real time. Like, I don't know where that balance is, and maybe it's not for this show. Maybe I'm not the host to bring that up. But at some point, it begs the question, what is the defender supposed to do? What can they do? What are they allowed to do? And in a split second, trying to make a decision on whether their tackle is legal low, legal high, or legal by dragging down by the hip, it just requires so much thought. Like, I was saying this to somebody today when it came to the kickoff. Like, you kick off, and the kickoff man has to determine where they are on the field, locate the ball, and realize if they're supposed to return it or they're not supposed to return it. And all in a split second, by the way, if they muff the kick, a defender could be right in their grill to pick it off the ground and have it be a major turnover. Like, it just, it seems like there's a lot of thinking for a defender and a kick returner. I'm not by any means saying the rules that have changed aren't going to make the game safer. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm starting to think this is going to be more and more difficult for players that do not play offense. And I guess that, in a nutshell, is what the NFL's trying to do. They're trying to emphasize the strength. You know what's kind of interesting, though? And I don't know if we talked about this after the Super Bowl, but it felt like that the strengths of the San Francisco 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs both had great offenses. Now, Kansas City's offense was very different than years past. That being said, they were two defensive-led teams, which is kind of interesting because for years we were seeing scoring in the low to mid-30s. That Super Bowl likely would have been played in the high teens, low 20s, had it not gone to overtime. And the defenses found a way to overcome, which is interesting. But here we are, yet another year, yet another offseason, where the defense is getting penalized again. And penalized may be too strong of a word, but penalized is another way they're going to have to relearn to tackle. I think we can all acknowledge, when we see something in real time in today's day and age in the NFL, when a low hit's dirty, when a high hit is dirty, I think we can all acknowledge that. And the targeting stuff that's been implemented, for the most part, I like it. I think it makes sense in today's NFL. No longer can you do the he got jacked up segments that used to be on ESPN. You can't do that anymore. You just can't. You know, with concussions at the forefront and those sorts of things, I'm pro that. I get it. I understand that. But can defenders in the moment really determine the tackle they're about to make is going to be this hip drop tackle? And from the description of it, it's less about the flags and more about the fines after the fact. So how many times do we see fines on a Monday or a Tuesday and we go back to the play and you're like, he got fined $25,000 for that? He got fined $55,000 for that? That's what we're going to do, and it's going to be multiplied. You know, we started to kind of have the ridiculousness of the roughing the quarterback stuff and on Mondays this past year, and the hip drop tackle is going to be added to that. Now, reportedly, again, that's what it seems to be, that it's going to be more fines and less flags. So, I don't know, a player in the moment, are they going to say, hey, yeah, I'm about to get fined $25,000 for this hit, but it's going to help us win? And maybe your playoff bonuses or your division bonuses. I think it's too convoluted. I don't know what the right answer is. But apparently the Players Association, not the Players Association, but the NFL felt so strongly that they passed this anyway without the approval of the Players Association. Actually, to the contrary, the Players Association was fighting this tooth and nail. I don't know, man. I just feel like sports are trying to, like, I know they're not in the same category, but the conversation of, hey, we're so popular, let's just change because we can change. Like, the whole thought process of March Madness trying to add more teams, it kind of just feels like, hey, we can do whatever we want, and it's not going to limit how exciting we are. And the NFL and March Madness are kind of the two things that still, once again, it no matter how much you complain, it's still great. The NFL is always great, you know, no matter what they do. Everybody feels like the ratings are going to drop at some point for the NFL. I've yet to see it. The NFL continues to get stronger and stronger to the point that now they're taking over Christmas Day. That used to be reserved for the NBA. Now the NFL's seen it with the way the calendar has fallen the last couple of years, and they say, we want a piece of that pie. So I guess they can do it. I guess they're going to do it. But I just watch this, and I just have a hard time feeling as though, like, what's next? You know, it wasn't really until this year we even knew the term hip drop tackle. And now it's being outlawed, and you watch these hits in real time, or you watch these tackles in real time. And I understand guys like Mark Andrews, the tight end from the Baltimore Ravens, got injured as a result of this hip drop tackle. I understand that. But I would imagine there's other hits that happen that really contribute to injuries multiplied. And so this specific tackle is going to make the game safer, I guess. But I just wonder what the end game is. I wonder what exactly happens, after this year, and what's next. I mean, what's the next hit that's not going to happen to you? I just, it's really interesting. And so I get the intent. I understand where it comes from, but yet it just makes me wondering where in the world, what are defenders supposed to do? You know, a lot of these things are happening in real time. Think about Tyreek Hill, okay? You're throwing a screen to Tyreek Hill, and you get literally a half a second to make a decision to bring him down. You think a defender's thinking about a hip drop tackle? Now, you can make a decision whether to go high, whether to go low, whether to go center as far as your target. Like that, we understand that. But to make a decision whether you're going to hip drop tackle him or not, I don't get it. I don't understand. And, I haven't been around the TV all day today. I haven't read stories on this, but I thought that this was, facing a lot of backlash because what I'm talking about here is really the narrative out there about, goodness gracious, man, it's really hard to be a defender in the NFL. It is. It's just really darn hard to be a defender in the NFL. Pass interference, roughing the passer, going high, going low, now the hip drop tackle. Like, I don't know, man. I don't get it. I don't understand. You can't jump over the pile. So it's amazing. It really, really is. So, again, what's going to be interesting about this, as we've seen these rules continue to lean the offense's way, somehow, some way, Kansas City was great defensively. Somehow, some way, San Francisco was great defensively. And over the last couple of years, the point totals have actually come down, if you can believe that, which I think should be an immense credit to these defenders. I mean, because I don't know how you teach this. I don't know how you do it. Like, a coach is trying to tell you, show you how to not hip drop tackle when Tyreek Hill's coming with 4-2 speed at you. Come on, man. It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. But here we are. This is the life of the NFL, and this is the life of constantly changing narratives of what you're supposed to do in a tackle and what you're not supposed to do in a tackle. I wouldn't know how to teach it. I wouldn't know how to describe it. It's amazing. It really, really is. So, I don't know if we really solved anything in this first segment of the show, but I feel like a lot of fans do out there as well. Looking at this and saying, putting your hands up and saying, what are you supposed to do? And it's a question that is impossible to answer. Impossible. So, again, if the intent, which I would imagine the intent, is to make the game safer, of course. There's not anybody out there that's going to, argue that point. Like, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. But at the same time, when does the acknowledgement come that you say, the game's just violent and physical? Like, it feels like you can't say football's violent anymore. Like, oh, don't say violent. But it's a bang bang sport. It's physical. Like, I mean, that's the essence of the game. If you take that away, you're going to flag football, and I don't think that's where we're headed. But it kind of begs the question, like, what more can they take away for defenders? Again, it's walking a very fine line for a reason. Because they're trying to make the game safer in a sport that is impossible to make fully safe. I mean, that's the fact of the matter. So, anyway, I guess we'll see how it plays out in the season. You know, the thing is, when rules get changed in the NFL, we talk about them in the offseason, and then they just kind of float away. They kind of fall by the wayside. We don't focus on it until that first fine will come up for the hip drop tackle. And no doubtably it will, and it'll be a topic on every single show about, hey, did you see that first fine? Oh, my gosh, it was $35,000 for a hip drop tackle. I don't know. It's what I would describe it is curious. That's what I would say. Thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. I appreciate that. Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News is going to be with us in less than 20 minutes from now. A lot of talk about Ball State men's basketball and a lot more going on with the program and the transfer portal. It's amazing. You know, we've got all this stuff happening with the NIT, the NCAA tournament, and yet it's full swing for the transfer portal right now. I mean, this is some of the most important times for a lot of these programs. You have heard other coaches say, you know what, I've been focused on the transfer portal and now my tournament. I mean, Bill Self in some form or fashion kind of said that, focusing on next year and focusing on the transfer portal. Amazing. It really is, but that's the nature we're in, I guess. So, all right, when we come back, we'll talk some Colts and Pacers. That's next. Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN. As always, presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie, online at wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road right here in Muncie, and online at wallsfurniture.com, at Mark WMUN on Twitter, X, whatever you call it. Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News, coming up here in a little bit. We're going to talk all about what's going on with Ball State Athletics at the moment's time. Of course, the big story from over the weekend was Peyton Sparks back to Ball State men's basketball. What's next? Jalen Anderson entered the transfer portal. It's been quiet over the last 24 hours, but we'll dive into those topics here in a little bit. I want to start here with Pacers and Colts-related topics. The Colts topics will extend further into the week. You know, as we enter the month of April, it's going to get very interesting from a draft perspective and where it goes, because obviously it feels like that's where the biggest additions will occur for the Indianapolis Colts, because they've done next to nothing really leading up to that. Pacers had a big win last night, and so it's kind of weird because they're West Coast road trip really is happening right now. Typically, it feels like that occurs more at the beginning of the season, but right now, this is a string of games that obviously are very important as it comes to the standings and everything. But they have had three straight games with West Coast contending teams, the Golden State Warriors, the Lakers, and now the LA Clippers. And the Pacers went 2-1 in those games. It's pretty good. They beat Golden State at Golden State, lost to the Lakers at Los Angeles, and then last night just thoroughly destructed the Los Angeles Clippers, who many believe are going to have a very deep playoff run, and they did so 133-116. Right now, the Pacers are locked into the sixth seed, and I got to tell you, it is so vitally important over these next nine games that the Pacers hold on to that position. Not going to be easy because Miami is right behind them, just a game back of the Pacers right now. But the Pacers are 6-4 in their last 10, and certainly last night that was a big effort to get to where they needed to go. Pacers are two games back of the fifth place spot, and they are three games back of four, three and a half games back of three. All of those are very much potential right this second. But here, you know, last week we spoke on Indiana, and there were some concerns. Tyrese Haliburton was not shooting the ball well. He was certainly not to his playmaking level. And people felt maybe there was fatigue. Maybe the injury had reemerged. And, you know, we tried to preach a little bit of patience And that's something, obviously, that fans have zero of. And here we are, now three games happened since that real conversation happened on Friday. And Tyrese Haliburton was pretty darn good in just about all three of those games. Even in the loss to L.A., he was really good against Golden State. And last night was 6-for-9 from three, which that's been the primary concern. But here's what people have to understand, okay? People have to understand it's been a very, very, very short amount of time that Tyrese Haliburton and Pascal Siakam have played with one another. Heck, it still feels like with Milwaukee, Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo are still figuring each other out. And it's taken the entire season to get there. They're starting to kind of feel the chemistry come together. And, you know, Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Haliburton have really had a third of the season to work together. Maybe even less than that if you look at it in totality. So every single game, the chemistry gets stronger. Every single game, I feel like the rest of the team knows how to play around them. And you know, Miles Turner as a third option on this team is kind of interesting because last night he had 24 points and I believe had four threes or something along those lines. Look, there were a couple of years where Miles Turner could have honestly been the second option, and that is scary. Now, Miles Turner as a third option as an inside-outside threat, that's dangerous. I mean, that really, really is. And so with Haliburton playing at his level and Siakam last night at 31 and was a lot to handle for Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard combined for 52 points last night, and that meant nothing because they could not handle Pascal Siakam on the defensive end. For a team that has arguably two of the best wing defenders in the NBA on the same team, Leonard and George, it should make you really, really enticed to watch Siakam and Haliburton operate because George and Leonard couldn't handle him. Couldn't at all. And so if you had to see a Milwaukee or a Boston, that's tough with Haliburton and Siakam playing together. So that was great. That was a great sign last night. I think that is a wonderful thing to watch for the Indiana Pacers. So keep that in mind. Indiana, down the stretch here, has a couple of very important head-to-heads. So the rest of the schedule really is important. It's pretty well balanced. You have nine games left. Five are at home. Four are on the road. You're at Chicago coming up a little bit later this week, so that's tomorrow. And by the way, this is really like a two-and-a-half-week sprint to the end of it. So Bulls on the road, then you have two at home, Lakers and Nets, on the road at the Nets, then Thunder, Heat at home, Raptors, Cavs on the road, and then Hawks to finish the season at home. So you have a good mix there. Obviously, the Thunder game is going to be tough, and they're battling for a playoff spot. You've got the Heat, who's nipping at your heels for that 6-7 spot, and as we know, the play-in round is extremely important to not be in for either of these teams. You get to play a true playoff series, and you're locked into the playoff picture in the top six. So the Heat on the 7th, which is, I guess, a week from this Saturday, that's huge. I mean, that's big. You got the Lakers who are fighting for position in the Western Conference. So you have a lot of very, very important games coming up. And I feel like you got out of a little bit of a valley, and specifically Tyrese Haliburton got himself out of a little bit of a valley. And look, it's going to happen. But, you know, the thing is, I mentioned the word patience and how fans don't have any of it. Well, get used to it. But Indiana is going to be in the play-in or playoff picture. I mean, they're going to clinch one of those two things at some point. Like, again, nobody except the Boston Celtics have clinched an actual playoff spot. And by the way, to get into the playoffs, you have to lock in one of the top six seeds. Have to. So that is extremely important. So if you were 7, 8, 9, or 10, which are the play-in spots, that is not technically a playoff berth. So if that tells you anything about Milwaukee, Cleveland, New York, Orlando, and Indiana, it's that all of those teams have yet to clinch a playoff spot. Any of those teams could technically be in the play-in. Now, it's extremely unlikely that Milwaukee will be a part of that because Milwaukee is 7 games ahead of Miami, six games ahead of Indiana. But again, the fact is there's still a lot to really figure out in the Eastern Conference. Western Conference, it's the top three teams are separated by a game and a half. So you will see Oklahoma City. So you'll have to face off against them. You'll have to face off against the Lakers. So there's some teams that you still have to face in the Western Conference that you're going to have to beat in order to get things rolling, in order to get in the playoffs. I got to tell you, it has been so fascinating this year for the Indiana Pacers, how they've done against teams like, the top teams in the league. Like, they've done very well against the Celtics and Bucks. They did very well against Denver and the Thunder and the Clippers. But Indiana struggled against the Heat, 76ers, Bulls, Hawks, the middle of the conference. The Lakers, the Warriors, those types of teams have really, really frustrated Indiana. So it is so important for them to not be in the play-in. I know I've harped on that time and time and time again, but I can't reiterate it enough because if the Pacers want to go on a long playoff run, they're better off playing Cleveland. They're better off playing the Bucks, the Celtics. As weird as that sounds, they are better than that. The Celtics have 15 losses this year, and believe it or not, Indiana is responsible for 2 of those defeats. The Bucks, the same thing. 25 losses. Pacers are responsible, I think, for 3 of those now, right? Didn't they win 3 of 4? It's amazing what the Indiana Pacers have done this season against the very top teams in the league. It defies logic because it doesn't make sense. Because you would think, like we talk about in collegiate sports, taking care of the middle of your conference, the middle to bottom of your conference, represents a large portion of your wins. Well, in Indiana's case, that is not the case. It is really quite strange if you want to know the truth. It really, really is. So, Indiana at 41-32. Again, they are a game ahead of Miami for the 6th and final playoff spot. They would play in the play-in if they would be in 7, 8, 9, or 10. Wacky. The NBA playoffs, hard to figure out, but the Pacers 9 games away from clinching that spot. So, we'll see how it all ends up playing out. All right, when we come back, we have a lot of Ball State sports-related topics in which to touch on. Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News will join us right after this. This is the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Final segment of a Tuesday edition of the program, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, brought to you by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you're getting all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. Well, amongst all the NCAA tournament madness, the transfer portal is open. Of course, Ball State active in that regard. The announcement earlier this week, actually on Sunday, and confirmed yesterday, Peyton Sparks back to Ball State men's basketball. Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News Sports Department with us as he normally is on Tuesday. I want to go all the way back to this. Have we ever figured, I may have asked you this a couple of weeks ago, the portal opened last Monday. When does it close? Why is it open now? Like, have we gotten any thoughts on the logistics of how this all works, or is it just kind of like, hey, this is the way the system works?
As far as I know, the portal doesn't close until official team practices begin. I want to say that's correct, because obviously you saw Jerron Boogie Coleman last year transfer away only a couple of weeks before team practices started. That was in either late July or early August. So it's open for a long time. I'm not exactly sure I believe it opens when your season's over. So if you're not playing, I guess that's not even true, because I think there's been a couple players who have been in the NCAA tournament or the NIT who have announced that they're going to be in the transfer portal before they even play their last game. So that's not even correct. I apologize for that.
Yeah, no. And that's why people are trying to figure this all out. And like you said, I believe there's an NC State player that entered the transfer portal and is playing in NCAA tournament games for NC State.
I think so, too. And that makes me think that maybe you can announce that you're entering the transfer portal at any time, but you can't be claimed until your season's over.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that is probably the case. It's all confusing and vague, and honestly, I feel like if you asked an NCAA official, they wouldn't even be able to tell you.
It's convoluted. Now, the two things that are certainly making collegiate sports different, and some have the opinion that it makes it worse. That's their opinion. You just kind of got to roll with the punches if it is what it is. They seem interconnected, but they're actually kind of separate. So the transfer portal is a NCAA deal. They control that. As I understand it, the NIL side of things, because people say, hey, you need to kind of lock down on NIL, that's out of the NCAA's hands. They can control the portal stipulations, but the NIL is not really under the NCAA umbrella. Is that what you assume as well?
That's what I understand. I believe NIL is essentially dependent on teams.
Right.
So, if a team had, like, Alabama's got more money than Ball State, so they can give more NIL money, and it's just kind of that simple as far as I know.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, when you go to the transfer portal and you're trying to bring somebody in, they want the NIL is a big part of the conversation anyway. It's a lot of fun, you and I have covered it in different ways, and we're still trying to figure it out as well. It's Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News Sports, with us now. As it comes to Peyton Sparks, of course, the announcement on Sunday, and you had some details on that yesterday, 48 hours afterwards, what have you learned about this situation?
Well, all I know is that, last week, I believe he announced that he was entering the transfer portal right before we went on air last week. I want to say that is the scenario that played out, and I know that I put it on Twitter. I might have even said it on this program, or X, excuse me, that Ball State should make a run at Peyton Sparks because they needed a big man. He obviously played at Ball State. He's close to people on the team like Bashir Jihad and Mickey Pearson, and Ball State did just that. He's only in the transfer portal for 5 days, and he's back at Ball State now. I've heard that Michael Lewis is very excited about it, as he should be, because – last year it was kind of out of Ball State's hands, their depth at the big man position. They thought they were going to have Ben Hendricks and Zane Doughty. Zane Doughty got hurt, left them just with Ben, and Bashir Jihad had to play the five for a lot of games. Now he can transfer back to a kind of more of a stretch four role. I mean, I think that Bashir plays more of a three than a five, which is a perfect stretch four. But anyways, now you have potentially two big guys off the bench when you didn't have any, or I guess you had Ben Hendricks for a little bit of a time if he wasn't starting. Getting Peyton back adds a lot as far as a position that they definitely lacked.
Yeah, there's zero question about this. And, I know right after the announcement was made, it was shortly thereafter that Jalen Anderson entered the transfer portal. And as we caution fans to understand, players have entered the transfer portal and then ended up returning back to their team. So that is that is part of it, that there's the potential there. And I'm not saying this just in relation to that young man entering the transfer portal. I think of this if Jalen Anderson was with the team. When you look at Bashir Jihad's development, and you look at what Peyton Sparks, when he was in the Mid-American Conference for 2 years, What guard out there wouldn't want to be a part of thinking they're going to get single coverage opportunities on the perimeter with so much attention with two all Mid-American Conference, former all Mid-American Conference performers in Sparks and Jihad? Should that be a massive tool for Michael Lewis in this program in the transfer portal going forward?
Yeah, and that's why Jalen transferring or entering the transfer portal, that surprised me because of that very reason that you just said. I mean, on the surface, that's a dream scenario for a true point guard like he is, who can not only score but does a really nice job of passing as well. When you have that kind of two-headed monster down below, that should free up a lot of opportunities. And also just the way that Jalen spoke about team and the future after the season ended, I thought he was going to stay. Surprised that he entered the portal. However, like you said, Ball State, you know, if there's guys out there who know that they can't really make it at a Power 5 or, I guess, a top-tier mid-major like the AAC, Ball State looks like a pretty appealing option. And so, you know, Jalen leaving, it's a really tough loss, really tough in my opinion, because not only is Jalen in the transfer portal, but so is Joey Brown and Trent Middleton. And the only point guard you have coming back is Ethan Britton Watts, who sat out all year with an injury, so you don't really know how he's going to recover from that. That said, Ball State needing a point guard, there's a lot of point guards out there in the portal, and they probably look like a pretty good option for a lot of them.
Yeah, I think it looks very interesting. And again, when you bring in somebody like Peyton Sparks, and we mentioned the attention that's there, we all know, as we talked about last year, the depth piece, and I know you talked with Coach Lewis about this many times after games about depth and those sorts of things. The fact that there's the potential where scholarships are open, it allows it to be more enticing because you can fill those spots with guys that you have a feeling can make you deeper. And you don't want guys that you recruited there. But again, you know, Quincy Adams, Joey Brown, etc. It allows you more flexibility because, as we said the other day, coaches can't tell players, hey, we're going to put you in the portal. Players have to make those own decisions. So in some ways, it allows Ball State to be more flexible this year.
Absolutely. And what I've been thinking of is, let's say everybody in the program stays, and let's say that Ball State adds one transfer guard, and that's the rest of the season, the off season for Ball State. Now, that's pretty unlikely. You know, there's a lot more, action than that normally. But let's just say that happens. You have a starting five with Ethan Britton Watts, Davion Bailey, Mickey Pearson, Bashir Jihad, Peyton Sparks. And then your second unit is you have Mason Jones, who's a proven starter, especially on the defensive end. You have Zane Doughty coming back from injury, Ben Hendricks, very experienced, and then that transfer guard. That's a pretty deep team, and that's not even counting Yuri Zagorsak as well, who got some decent playing time. And I know they have a couple freshmen coming in, and who knows, they could be good players as well.
Yeah, it provides some interesting perspectives there, but Peyton Sparks back with Ball State men's basketball. That was confirmed yesterday. Sunday was the official announcement, and I would imagine over the next week we'll get even more clarity on the transfer portal for Ball State. Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News, going to have the coverage of this and so much more. Kyle, thanks as always for joining us on this Tuesday. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark.
That's Kyle Smedley with us. I think all options are kind of out there. But again, not just NIL, but opportunities to compete for a championship are going to be high on the list for a lot of these guards that are out in the transfer portal. And I feel like you have a very appealing case with the structure you have in place with Bashir and with Peyton Sparks and others. I think it looks enticing from that regard. So, all right, lots of different topics on the program today. We didn't really get to Colts. We'll do that later in the week. And, of course, Wapahani Boys Basketball State this weekend. We'll have more details on that coming up tomorrow. Big thanks to Kyle Smedley and all of you for joining us. We're back with you tomorrow, same time, same place, 4 o'clock. Have a great evening. We'll talk to you tomorrow on WMUN.